Thank you, Joan. You know, I was on NPR many years ago, and I had the host actually ask me if sodomy was indeed a city in New Jersey. All right. You know, I'm grateful to see everybody. I have to admit, I was most excited to see Nikki because I hoped she was going to bring the baby. So next time. All right, this is a poem about one of the worst weddings I've ever been to in my life, where it was the only wedding I've ever been to where the wedding party went to the bar before the wedding. We went to a place called Ermey's Lounge in South Toledo. If you have the chance, never go there. All right, this is called A Summer Wedding at Ermey's Lounge. Before we ever got to the church, the entire wedding party pulled the limos up in front of the bar because somebody's great aunt's third cousin had left an open tab, and the sun seemed to pour in from outside and reflect off 1,000 different NASCAR posters that lined the walls. Even as it rained outside, I went into the bathroom and did lines off the toilet seat just to prove I was still cliche enough to be there. But being the wisest man in a hillbilly soap opera is hardly a moral victory. Pissed drunk before noon and not quite high enough to love ourselves, we should have stayed there. Where a stripper with gapped teeth played pool and sang, "Let's get drunk and screw," as her lungs filled with hope in the shape of a coffin. And it was the most honest thing I'd ever heard. And God was in full view. And we exchanged vows with a shot glass set on fire. As holy as any church, and as beautiful as any summer flower in search of light. As anyone who is close to me knows, I had cancer surgery about a year and a half ago. Now it's closer to that. And one of the things that is upsetting to me, I'm 47, but so many of the people that I see are like 15. And they're in worse shape than I am, so... I had a conversation with a girl at the cancer clinic about Nicolas Cage, who I happen to believe is the greatest actor of our time. And if you haven't seen Long Legs, you should go to it. But so I wrote this poem about this girl that I met. It's called Poem for the Nick Cage Superfan at the Ellis Fischel Cancer Center. We weren't meant to sit in waiting rooms and paper masks. But once you make it through the zombie apocalypse, rooms like this are all that's left. A pale young girl, not even old enough to drive, has medical bracelets on up to her elbows, and a single tattoo of a rose half visible on her upper shoulder. She prays for a fiery car crash or some light hand-to-hand combat while jumping out of a plane that's running out of gas that she calls her body. Anything exciting enough to wake her from the stupor of her medication? As she talks to me about Nick Cage for at least 10 minutes. Maybe this conversation has been going on for centuries. We all pray to our own gods, vampires, and holy men. Sometimes you have to let out a scream in the middle of the night because it just feels right. Shaking the cancer from your skin. Sometimes you have to imagine, what would Nick Cage do in this situation? And I think my God will punch your God right in the face, because sometimes that feels right too. Many years ago, I worked in a Walden's bookstore, and if you were new, they gave you the shitty job, and the shitty job was running the calendar kiosk in the middle of the mall and having middle-aged dudes come by and just check out the girls in swimsuits and then buy calendars with cats on them. But I had an MRI in December where I was all freaked out, so I wrote this poem. This is called On the Prospect of Dying in December. Not the end of the year, but maybe the end of your life. And you don't know if you should buy another calendar. You didn't buy the one you have now. You think about how every morning felt like you were about to be shot out of a cannon, with no furniture and plenty of ramen. How life like that makes great poems, but offers little peace. Though in the end, that goes away anyway. So you run out into the street and make a note to remind yourself to tell people you love them before you realize you're dreaming and wonder if any of it was ever real. You would never have given leaves any thought before this. You would have let ghosts go right on dreaming about sparrows on the tattooed arms of young girls who write poems about the moon. Only now you write them too. They're all about the past. And whatever year it is, you're sitting there alone. My cousin is here, and she can attest to this. Our aunt would take us to concerts at times, and some of them like were way, way out of the age range that we were, and we saw Kiss, and Kiss has this annoying habit of like doing a farewell tour, and then 3 years later, they're back again, and they never seem to fucking go away. And so I wrote this book. It's called Farewell Tour. It was published in England. But this is the title poem from that. At 15, we all want to fly into the sun when it still seems like there's plenty of time to find our way back on that next bit of highway. Before the road less traveled is closed for repairs, before crumbling away altogether. Where Kerouac and Richard Hugo throw their wild fist in the air, blanketing the Montana sky with youth, never imagining they'll be dead, never dreaming that this is where all of the wishing wells will run out of water. At 46, I think about how someone had to find Ted Berrigan's bloated body, about how someone had to chip Bruce Embry's heartbroken heart free from an icy Idaho stream. As a pair of deers drank in every word, one day soon, I'll end up in some dry Missouri patch of grass. Right now, though, I'm thinking about how at 15, I raised my fist at a Kiss concert in a now demolished arena in Pittsburgh. I think about how, like God, Gene Simmons could make the lights go dim just by waving his hands, and how Kiss could keep coming back every few years, fatter and fatter, with their makeup running down their faces under the broiling stage lights without ever once reaching the sun. And how while Kerouac remains buried in the ground, sometimes farewell doesn't have to mean forever. I'm going to read about three more poems here. Okay. If I can find this, which I should be able to, here we go. I live in a very small town, and every year, it's 99.9% white people, but every summer they have a town fair, and one year I was throwing out hard candy at small children as I want to do. And so there was a pregnant girl on her lawn wearing a Tupac Shakur t-shirt. And my only thought was, where the fuck did she get that shirt? And so I wrote this poem. It's called East Coast, West Coast in Southern Missouri. A high school girl with thick black glasses and a baby bump barely concealed by a secondhand Tupac t-shirt stands on the front of her lawn. As a volunteer fireman who didn't make it past the ninth grade throws candy in her direction with a pitching arm that will never take him any further than the next county over. A love story held together with tape, like the glasses peeling in the summer sun. Candy corn at her feet like stray bullets in a gang war, in a music video that will last the rest of her life. A baby under each arm, pacing east and west, a drive-by that goes in circles leading nowhere, always in rivalry with possibility. Maybe the old owner of the shirt fed the hungry, danced in an empty swimming pool, and swore there was music that nobody else could hear. Or maybe she actually saw who killed Tupac and Biggie both and never said a word. Because there was peace in just letting things go, like the boy who placed the shirt over her shoulders as she shivered, taking what she hadn't offered to begin with. Because when you wash out the blood stains, all you're left with is your own heartbreak, standing on your own front lawn, wearing someone else's dream, shrunken down so many times with wrinkles that you can never quite smooth out. Until you're almost invisible, with a snow cone melting down your arm in the sun, bleeding red, white, and blue, as a single sock fresh out of the dryer sticks to your belly, and that's the best part of your day. I'm going to do something that I don't think enough people do. In poetry, when there are readings, I'm going to read you a poem by my friend Victor Clevenger, who's here with us today. It's become my practice, like over the last 20 years, to usually pick a poem by one other person and make sure they get represented. Usually it's a friend of mine who's passed away, who isn't here to speak for themselves, but gratefully Victor's here. So. All right, this is a poem called Virginity Lost, and it's from a chapbook that he had out called The Aching Season. So, yes, there is a possibility that our innocence will be lost in the inferno, darling. Pressed tightly against you, we breathe only when we breathe. We breathe only when we push back, separate, and gasp. We breathe only when we push back, separate, and gasp. Yes, there is the possibility that our innocence will be lost in the inferno, darling. Yes, there is. Yes, there is. And I am not scared at all. Like they say we should be. Young, burning love, forever carrying our bag of ash and bones. And... And I know that Victor could read that better than me. It's always, you try to catch someone else's rhythm, and it's not always the easiest thing in the world. I wasn't sure what to finish. Okay, I'll finish with this. I lived in a trailer park for a good bulk of my life, and I did this little book of mostly trailer park poems. It's called The Double Wide Book of the Dead. But this is just the title poem from that. The Double Wide Book of the Dead. Our house wasn't nearly that big, with its cheap plaster walls, where I covered my bedroom with posters of long-forgotten 80s hair bands and built a temple to suburban poverty with awful ghost stories scribbled into yellow legal pads, with awful poems about pale girls scribbled into yellow legal pads. It was all doll ink and Saturday morning cartoons and reduced lunch tickets, with peanut butter sandwiches and tomato soup every day, and dreams hidden away in pencil boxes, and coins tossed into shopping mall fountains, and girls with hips as wide as jelly bracelets. You could only corral so many spirits into such a tight space until the dead started to look like you, like your mom or your dad when they were your age, when they looked for answers in sad songs too, in broken houses where the dead had more room to roam and stretch their legs and dance.
I just like to thank my family for being here. We usually have family reunions. We call them funerals. So it's nice that everybody here is above ground. And I'm not a whore like my friend Jason Baldinger, but I do have a book or two on me. But he is a handsome man. Look at him. All right. Thank you, Joan.